This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for some relief from the heat with an artistic twist, an adventure to the animal kingdom in search of truth, or an exploration of what it means to live in an age of global warming, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. I'm your host, Diane Mack. It's too darn hot. Where do you go to get relief from the heat? One of the state's leading arts foundations is cooling residents off with an award-winning campaign that has a cultural twist. It's called Art and AC. Jessie Haynes is the managing director of the Hellas Foundation, and she joins us. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Diane.
This latest push, Art and AC, is part of the Hellas Foundation's Art for All Free Days campaign at local cultural institutions. Tell us, how does it work?
It is very fun. Let me start by saying that. And we've had a wonderful response. All of August, when the heat hits 93 degrees, pursuant to David Bernard, our meteorologist at Fox 8, the next day is free at the Ogden, New Orleans Museum of Art, and the CAC.
And this goes on until the end of the month, so we have just a few more days to wish for heat.
Exactly. It's a very unusual thing that a lot of people say, I hope it's hot tomorrow so the museums are free. And it's something that we thought would be really fun for New Orleanians. It's a positive twist, I guess, on the really painful heat. And when you go, of course, there's snowballs, hand fans, water, and it's just a great way to cool off while you're there.
Which museums are participating, and how did the overall campaign come about?
The Hellas Foundation has been funding a free day for a very long time, beginning at New Orleans Museum of Art. It's a Wednesday, you know, every week of the year, wherein admission is free for Louisiana residents. And realizing how important access to the arts is as the crucial, critical mission of the foundation, we've started to build it out over time. And now there are 5 participating institutions all year long, free days. The Ogden Museum, the CAC, New Orleans Museum of Art, the Botanical Garden, particularly including the Hellas Foundation Enrique Alferez Sculpture Garden, and then the Children's Museum also has a free day that rotates from month to month, which that specific schedule can be found on their website. But Art and AC was just a really fun way, we thought, to sort of highlight that there's this Art for All campaign that goes on year-round for August. We wanted to bring attention to this cultural resource in our city and make sure that as many residents knew about it so they can take advantage of it year-round.
Now, this has been a pet project for you. Tell me, when and why did you get involved, and what has been the program's success?
So far, we are thrilled with the success. It began last year. So last year was our inaugural launch of Art and AC, and it's actually pretty funny because it started at 95 degrees, but apparently we're having a cooler August this year. And pursuant to David Bernard's recommendation, we reduced it to 93 degrees. We did it last year. We actually only had 3 of those days last year, and it was wildly successful. We had over 2,500 people utilize the 3 institutions during that time. It was very exciting. We had a really wonderful community response. And so we decided, of course, to do it again. And it's been really interesting because it's been hotter than we anticipated. So I think we've had 7 or 8 of these free days so far. And the preliminary numbers are showing that we will definitely have thousands of people that have enjoyed the museums because of this.
Now, what is the overall goal of the Hellas Foundation in providing the free art days?
The primary mission of the Hellas Foundation is advancing access to the arts in this community, bringing really high-quality cultural opportunities to our residents as well as visitors. The Art for All is really a key piece of this work that we do. It's the idea that anyone here should be able to access our city's main cultural institutions throughout the course of a week free of charge. And so in addition to funding large exhibitions at the institutions and other special projects, this is a key piece of what we do every year, year over year, to ensure that as many New Orleanians as possible can enjoy these assets that exist within our city. Also, public art sightings. So we have the Poydras Corridor Sculpture Exhibition, which, again, is sculptures that are lining all of Poydras for anyone downtown to be able to see. There's also signage and an app that you can use to learn more about the artist and dive a little bit deeper on that project. Another sort of recent forward-facing, community-minded project we're working on right now that enhances our commitment to providing this sort of free access to public art opportunities for people is Unframed, which is a project we're working on now with the Arts Council. And It is a arts district comprehensive mural project that will have 5 large walls that we're launching right now. On our website, as well as on the Arts Council's website, there's an open call for artists to make submissions, and the selection committee will be working on that and announcing the artist selections as well as the walls at LunaFet in December. So that's just another big project we're working on right now that we think is a way to provide these cultural opportunities throughout the city.
And this is also providing great exposure for local artists.
Absolutely. If you really are interested in seeing what our thriving local artist community is working on right now, the CAC as well as the Ogden Museum both have their juried shows up right now, which is a great opportunity to see what local makers are doing.
Jesse Haynes, Managing Director of the Helles Foundation. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
The Helles Foundation's Art and AC campaign ends August 31st. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Artist and author Alex Beard has been busy working on a soon-to-be-released children's book. It's a tale from the watering hole he calls The Lying King. Beard's parable has a timely lesson he says everyone can learn from. Alex Beard is here. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always delighted to be with you.
And I always look forward to talking with you, especially to learn about your travels to Africa and what you learn from the animals you illustrate in your paintings and books. What's the latest?
Well, as you said, I have a new book, The Lying King, which is a parable about telling the truth and the consequences for not doing so. Because I spend a lot of time in Africa, I'm familiar with the animals, and I use them as an anthropomorphic device to be able to reflect back on ourselves. But if you want to tell the truth about a person, better to do it through a warthog.
And that's your animal of choice in The Lion King?
In this case, my animal of choice is a warthog. There's something about the buffoonery of the pig that allows you to be pointed and humorous at the same time. A lot of people will read this book and they'll think it's connected specifically to current events in politics. But the reality is that that's not true. This is about life in general. If you lie, you will get caught. And the consequences for that are dire. There's a reason that we teach our children, and have for many generations, that lying is not acceptable. Because, frankly, it isn't. And in the noisy environment in which we find ourselves, we have lost that simple truth, that lying is not an acceptable path.
So what's The Lying King lying about?
Well, in this case, the Lying King is lying to make himself bigger than he is and more important than he should be. And in the course of doing so, he ascends to the throne on the backs of his lies, and consequences ensue.
One can learn a lot from a children's book.
For sure. There's a tradition, you know, Diane, that I think is one of the most rich literary traditions. And you think about books like, simple ones like Yertle the Turtle, but also Animal Farm, and Watership Down, and frankly, Aesop's Fables and Kipling's Just So Stories, where animals are being used to reflect on greater truths that can teach us all simple lessons to follow.
Is there something you can share from the story?
It doesn't turn out well for the king.
Does the truth catch up with the king?
Invariably, the truth always catches up with all of us. I mean, that's the rub, right? Which is that these things don't necessarily happen in the time that we as spectators want them to. But there is no version where the lying demagogue escapes unscathed. History teaches us that the curve, the arc of the liar, ends in disaster for the liar himself and those that are around him. And if we forget that simple truth, the things that bind us begin to fray. How do you do business with somebody you don't trust? How do you talk to your children about the importance of integrity as the baseline for their lives if it seems that the liars are getting away with it. So right now we're in the middle of this environment where there are accusations and counter-accusations, falsehoods seem to be running rampant, and we believe that the liars are succeeding simply because we're still in the midst of the lie. But if you were to fast forward in time to look back on where we are now, there are no cards in that deck that end well for the serial liars.
We've had plenty of liars in the world's history.
For sure.
And you're saying that they've all ended up in the same way?
Well, the details of how they get their just desserts differs. The result is the same. There is no, and I don't want to get personal to individuals in this case, because this is really more apocryphal about the archetype than it is about the individual. But if you think back just over the course of the 20th century, find me a successful liar. There aren't any. If you think about the course of the arc of people's lives, there are folks that have been in our history books who have had very distinguished lives up until the point that they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. And then we don't remember anything other than the lie and the getting caught for it.
I believe it was Abraham Lincoln who once said that in order to be a successful liar, you have to remember the last lie you told.
Yeah, lying is impossible. You tell a lie, and then you have to tell another lie to cover the lie, and another lie to cover the lie that you told to tell the lie. We are so hypercharged in politics right now that all of our focus seems like a white-hot heat to be directed in that direction. But the reality is that this is more of a societal question. Who do we think we are? And I don't mean that like going to a restaurant and not getting a table. I mean, who is it that we actually believe that we should be? And what kind of example do we want to give to each other, to those that follow us, and to the rest of the world? You know, one of the things that makes me particularly proud of being an American, of which I am very proud, is the nature of our beacon on the hill as a moral arbiter for injustice around the world. And if we lose that focus, the great strength that upholds the nation crumbles. So, forget about the individual for the moment and think about the long course of the nature of who are we as a moral people striving for global integrity. Not an easy thing to accomplish. But if there is nobody striking and seeking the truth and that higher plane, then there's no chance of getting there.
So what life lessons would you like kids and adults alike to take away from The Lion King?
Be honest with each other. Deception is not a formula for success in the long term. If you think that you're going to get away with it, you are wrong. It doesn't work that way. You might get away with it for a little while, but at the end of the day, these things always catch up to you. That's in the newspaper every day on the local, state, national, and international stage. And there are no exceptions, period.
Artist and author Alex Beard, thanks for stopping by.
Pretty heavy this go-around, eh?
Pretty heavy this go-around. Alex Beard's The Lion King is published by Greenleaf Book Group Press. Alex will be on hand at Octavia Books, 513 Octavia Street, Tuesday, September 4th, for a book signing at 6 p.m., before embarking on a cross-country book tour. What does it mean to live in an age of global warming? That's the subject of Future Fossils, an upcoming artist talk and musical activation of a living public art installation at Grodat Youth Farm in City Park. Artist Hannah Shalu calls her sculpture Terraforming in the Anthropocene. Hannah Shalu joins us with cellist Kerry Washington. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Terraforming in the Anthropocene, that's a mouthful. What does it mean?
I really like the term terraforming. It's kind of A sci-fi term, usually hear it referring to Mars or how we're going to alter a planet in the future, but I'm really thinking about how we've built this landscape and sort of the landscape that will accrete from the waste we leave behind, and also thinking about waste in terms of a resource. And Anthropocene refers to our current geological era, where since the Industrial Revolution, humans have been actively altering the environment and getting us to the place we are now. So sort of as I look to the future and imagine the things we will leave behind, which even when we are gone, will become these sort of future habitats and the landscape that will take over from the things we leave behind.
So what does that landscape look like to you?
That landscape to me is a bit dystopian. I've crafted the installation from primarily found materials, old pipes, thinking about the pipelines that are crisscrossing our landscape, and then also the sort of casual plastic litter that passes through our lives pretty quickly, but will be around for the next few thousand years, long after we're gone. So the structure is made from these pipes, and the trash and plastic become these sort of orbs from which native plants are growing. And over the course of the summer, they're covering the structure and sort of creating this strange place people can happen upon in City Park and think about these ideas.
So that's why you call it a living sculpture, because it's been there all summer and it's morphed.
Yeah, even over the course of the day, it changes. There's pink and yellow LED grow lights in the installation, and at sunset, these lights come on, adding a sort of another unearthly element to the work. And if you're just sort of walking in the park, you might notice it and be drawn in. And then sort of as you're exploring the installation, thinking about what is your relationship to these materials? What is your complicity with this? The lights are powered by solar panels, and the solar panels also power a rainwater harvesting watering system that waters the plant. So while the piece is dystopian, it is also meant to sort of inspire people to think about creative solutions that we can all take on.
And Gary, you add another dimension to this project. You are one of several musicians involved.
Yeah.
How do you enhance the experience?
I believe that the music tells all the options. It tells the story before humans. It tells the story, you know, when humans lived harmonious with the earth. It tells the story, you know, during the Industrial Revolution when we start creating trash and start, you know, filling the oceans with oil and trash. And, you know, it also tells a story of a possibility of a future, you know, like a lotus flower grows in murky water. So the concept of taking trash, something that isn't desirable, and creating something beautiful with it. So I think the music really shows all those different scenarios.
So the music is helping us to find a solution.
Definitely.
Now, in that search, Hanna, you're also taking visitors through the installation.
I'll be there sort of doing casual walkthroughs of the work and informally answering questions, talking about the sculpture, and then also showing people how the solar panels and the rainwater harvesting works. And then at sunset, as the lights come on, I'll sort of give a short context about the work and then introduce the performance and how they're sort of building on these themes.
Who else is on the program?
It's going to be Jose Fairman on guitar, Denise Frazier on violin, Luther Gray on percussion, Sultana Isham on violin, Moon on viola and technology, and then Gary on cello and technology.
The technology is a tool we're basically using in conjunction with the music to create just a different atmosphere. So we're using harmony, like consonant harmonies, basically to represent the beauty of human beings. And when we get into the technology, that's mostly representing the dystopia in most cases. Although with my technology, I'm representing both.
Now, for many people, global warming is one of those intangible subjects, something they maybe don't connect with because they don't see the effects of climate change every day. How are you all hoping art will bring about a change in our attitude about this issue?
Yeah, I believe art is a really powerful tool to get people to think about these big issues that seem so overwhelming and sort of get people to think about these in more approachable ways. And as an artist, I was really excited to do this sculptural work that could be living in public in a place people aren't necessarily expecting to see artwork and really catch them off guard as they approach it from afar. It's a green canopy wanting to know more about it. And then as they're inside of it, sort of noticing the trash and the plastic and sort of having this slower burn of the experience of being surrounded by these things, which are now giving life to plants, and thinking, oh, wow, like I just used a plastic water bottle and tossed it out, and that's going to be around for 1,000 years. And how am I complicit? And what are like the small changes I can make? I'm offering the sort of renewable resources as a tangible way forward, but also thinking about how do we push our leadership to make these changes on a bigger scale. So thinking about what changes people can make in their own lives, what we need to push from our leadership. And I've also been doing workshops with young people because I feel like ultimately that's who's inheriting these problems. We're sort of passing it on, not dealing with it ourselves, and really wanting to open their eyes early so they can be working on these solutions.
I think it's a beautiful art piece collectively. I'm excited to see how it all comes together.
Artist Hannah Shalhoub and cellist Gary Washington. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Future Fossils, a musical activation of terraforming in the Anthropocene, takes place Sunday evening, September 2nd, at Grodat Youth Farm, 150 Zachary Taylor Drive in New Orleans City Park. Installation walkthroughs begin at 7, followed by an artist talk and performance at 7:45. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation and from Christwood Retirement Center in Covington. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.